We begin today with someone who was there and who knew Dr. King well. Former journalist Zernona Clayton was the first woman of color to have her own Atlanta television show on WAGA-TV.
But I'm also an everlasting friend of Martin Luther King. I'm in Atlanta at the invitation of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. from 1963 to now.
Clayton worked with the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, SLIC for short, and was a close advisor to Dr. King. These days, she's CEO of the Trumpet Awards Foundation. Now in her late 80s, she remembers King as if it were yesterday. We joined her at her Atlanta office. She points to several pictures hanging on the wall of Dr. King. One shows her on stage with King in front of a large group of children. He's speaking in an Atlanta neighborhood with a lot of public housing.
I didn't feel that Dr. King had a relationship with the people he preached about, you know, the poor kids, so to speak. So I said, Dr. King, let's have a Christmas party and invite the children and have a big party for the kids. And you could be Santa Claus. And he thought it was a great idea. He wouldn't put a Santa Claus suit on. But he said, okay, you know, I'll be a part of it. So what's significant about that picture, that was the first time he met with those neighborhood kids, but it launched a spirit of support for children in public housing, and we were responsible for it. So I love that picture, his meeting for me.
Inside her office, Zernona shared more of her thoughts and memories of Dr. King.
I think that Martin Luther King's spirit was an infusion for young people to get up and do something. And, you know, he said, Dr. King said, that we've got to have moments in our life that we go out and do something that has meaning to the point that we're willing to die for it. So I saw the picture in my mind that those young people were saying, we're tired of being shot up in their schools, feeling unsafe. We're going to do something about this gun control. And I saw Martin Luther King again.
You know, Zernona, a little later in the show, we're going to talk to the great actor Clifton Powell, who played Dr. King in Selma, Lord Selma. And he shared something with me that I want to ask you about. He told me that he thinks Dr. King would be disappointed at the rate of change in this country. And I wonder how much closer you think we are to Dr. King's conception of the beloved community.
I know he would be pleased to see those young people. But in reality, the March for Change had some results, but he would be disappointed if he were here today. He would be reminded of the actor who rehearses his lines, trying to get his part perfected and get it right so he can go to the stage and do his delivery. The musician will concertize and rehearse and practice and practice until she got it right and then go to perform. And he would say, you all been practicing on this 50 years after I left and you still don't have it right yet? I think that's what he would ask. You don't have it yet? Because you see, when we think about all the wonderful progress we made, and we did, through Dr. King's efforts and others, we got the Fair Housing Bill, we got the right to vote, and people stayed home, by the way. So he made and was responsible for a lot of the progress we've made. But we still haven't gotten there yet. We have not gotten what he called the beloved community. We haven't gotten to the point yet where we love everybody. We haven't gotten to the point yet where we'll treat everybody right. We haven't gotten to the point yet where we'll feed the hungry and clothe the naked. Every time the issues come up, we got some opposition. So his work has not been finished. And when I got the information that this last national election, where we had the lowest minority turnout in what they said 18 years or so, I was just sick. Because I'm seeing everyday men walk around today who shed blood. Dr. C.T. Vivian was down at the courthouse in Alabama, trying to get us registered to vote. didn't get the vote, trying to just get registered to vote, not to burn the building down, trying to register to vote. Finally got a Voting Rights Act where we can vote now. How could people stay in bed? Because I see the blood still running down his face where he was beaten by officers of the police force when they were just trying to get us registered. We have the right. We're not exercising it. If Dr. King were here today, he would just ask the questions, why not?
Do people today have a full enough understanding of who Dr. King was and what the struggle was at root level?
No. I saw an article where a mother was trying to figure out how she could get the message over to her 9-year-old daughter when she asked her daughter, do you know what happened to Dr. King? She said, yeah, he did wrong and they killed him. And she was just really devastated because she didn't think they were that far behind in getting the message across in her own house. And so she said she had to do something fast. But I think some people, you know, considered that the fact he must have done something wrong and they killed him. But you see, we had the FBI, you know, a high-level official in our country, just staying on Dr. King and making him a bad guy because that's what he wanted. So when you put enough information out there and circulate it well as J. Edgar Hoover did, there are people who believe he must have done something wrong to stay on him so closely and then make him such a guy that you kill him. So not enough people know what he was going through.
We talk about the assassination, but let me ask you, why was he assassinated?
There was, you know, a strong feeling that he was disturbing the country. And of course he was, I guess, when you think about it. He was an annoyance to a lot of people. You know, what's he doing now, they would ask, what now? And the thought of, you know, all Dr. King would do is put out there a thought like we're planning for the March on Washington. I even said, oh, listen, they're not going to want you in Washington tearing up that pretty green grass, you know. We think of Dr. King's presence as being destructive. And then there were those in the South where he started with the movement who said he would come to our town, tear it up, and then leave. That wasn't the case. And I was just reading an article, I didn't know this until just recently, that the mayor of Memphis said to him after the first phase of the sanitation workers' strike, they said, Dr. King, and it's in the documentary that's coming up next week. He said, the mayor said, Dr. King, you know, we know more about our city than you do. We didn't need you coming out here destroying the tranquility of the town or something to that effect. And I want to ask you, why did you come to Memphis? And I had never known this, but Dr. King said, you know, to be honest, I was misled. But I'm here now. And I've seen some of the inequities that they're restless about. And he raised his voice. I'm here to stay until we get all of that change, until you get equity, treat people right, work them and pay them. I'm staying until we get those things corrected. Now, that was kind of a prevailing mood in a lot of cities, that he's coming to our town, tear it up, and then he's going back home. And so there were a lot of people who felt that his presence was a destructive presence.
How would you describe his bearing, his presence for young people now who don't have that, who don't know that, who don't have a sense of it, really?
The man was committed. I always tell people the one thing when I'm asked, what do you remember most and best about him? I said, I remember and admired most about him is that he practiced what he preached. He preached nonviolence and practiced it. He preached loving everybody, and he did. And that's how he and Stokely Carmichael had their first separation, because Stokely said, I'm sick of these white people. You know, they weren't right then, they're not right now, and they ain't gonna be right in the future, so I'm sick of them. Dr. King said, we can't do without white people. they're part of our America. They're part of our world. That God created each of us in his own image. And underneath the skin, we're all the same.
That was my conversation with Zernona Clayton, a close advisor to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and his family.